Hi, and welcome to the They Call Me the Ghost podcast, a podcast for those looking for good stories, looking for adventure. Today's episode is Top Secret Future Mission, Back in Time. In a race in time and against time, one man embarks on a journey to get the job done and bring his target home. Narrated by me, the ghost, each and every time. Let's get started. Hello, it's the ghost. Welcome to your weekly dose of the real world, where truth is stranger than fiction and things are not always as they seem. Time travel, an idea brought to us by fantasies and fiction, but today's story is neither. It's about a real man from far away who's come a long distance to carry out what should have been one simple task. His mission? Get his target and bring him home. But slight changes in his own plan lead him to me. They call me the ghost. I was an agent for the CIA, but today I'm an independent operative, working some of the most bizarre cases that exist in our world, responding to requests for assistance where help elsewhere is non-existent or not possible. These jobs are outrageous, mysterious, and unbelievable, but they are out there. And today is the story of just one of them. Take a listen and enjoy. The way this job began was not like any other job would or should, unless maybe you're in a very small group of mine. No request, therefore I had no real peek into what this could be. And even when I laid eyes on the guy, I had no clue who he was or that he would have any business with me. But it turns out he knew exactly who I was. I came upon him there right outside of the warehouse, and of course, I figured the guy was either lost or very confused, but he was there, sitting right outside. I was walking in with Scarlett on our way in. It was around 5:30 in the morning, and here's this guy. We see him, and it looks like he slept there. When we showed up, like we did, we startled him awake, and he's up off the floor with his hand out faster than anyone you'd ever seen, and he introduces himself. And I'm referring to him as Mr. Thane Norris. And he was one interesting guy. He addressed me as Miss Ghost and told me that he'd come a long way and asked if I would be so kind as to give him just 5 minutes. He opened up one of the pockets in the black bag that he has hung over his shoulder and across his body, and Scarlett and I are just looking at him, not knowing who he is or what he's about, and he pulls out this small piece of paper and he hands it to me. And on this piece of paper is a numeric code, and it's a code that's personal to me. I have no idea who this guy is or why he would have this, but this is a code that only certain people have that are in my very close network. If they submit a request with this code, then I know they're who they say they are, and I'm to assume that the request is legitimate. But there are only a few people that have this, and I know who they are. And I didn't know this man. I look at him and I tell him to follow me as we make our way inside the warehouse. I'm willing to know more. Scarlett and I set everything down, and she stays back in the front area as I lead Mr. Norris over to the couches. Scarlett starts some coffee while I look this guy over. I mean, he doesn't look like anyone who really is lost. He doesn't look confused in any way. He just looks sort of tired. He thanks me for taking the time to meet him and tells me that the people he works with and for, they know all about me and the work I do, and that's how he got the code. Tells me that our work is similar, not the same, but some would consider it very similar. So I let him continue. Mr. Norris tells me that he's coming to me because he was referred to me, number one. But also, after hearing about who I am and the kind of work I do, he thought I would be the best person to understand what he needs. And understand, it's real. He gathers his thoughts and reiterates that although I might think he's nuts with what he's about to say, and the fact that we found him on the ground outside of our place, he asks that I listen and consider all that he's about to tell me as real and as fact, and as of great importance. The fact that he had my secured number, I don't even flinch. I reassure him that I've heard and come to believe many things that at one time I might have brushed off. I tell him I'm all ears and I'm ready to listen with an open mind. Mr. Norris starts out by telling me that he's looking for a man and that he's come a long distance to track this guy down. He reaches into his bag again and pulls out this small card. It's silver, and it's made out of metal. On one side of it, there's a symbol, and it's a triangle with these lines through it. It's all engraved in black. And on the other side, there's a string of numbers. And he says that this is his identification, not that it would do any good or mean anything to us, but he wanted to at least show me that he had some. Said the number was personal to him, as well as it represented his rank and division within his agency. Now, this says something without him really having to say much. He's easing into it. That identification card is like something we would have, but it also looks advanced, like maybe something from the future. I want him to tell me. So I ask him, what agency? And Scarlett comes over to sit with us, and now he's looking at both of us. And he lets us know that he's heard all about us. He's heard all about the team, and he's been informed and is well aware of the jobs that we have done. Says he's more than comfortable to talk to us. And he just asks for our patience as he explains it all. Then he adjusts in his seat and starts doing just that. He repeats his name and then tells us he's an agent, a special agent who tracks down people that have gotten away, slipped through the cracks or their fingers, as was this case. He digs into the main pocket of his bag again and pulls out a smaller hardcover folder type box. And he sets it on the table, looks at us one more time, and then he opens it and pulls out a sheet that has some information on it about who he works for. So we skim it over as he tells us that his agency is Trace. Their purpose is to track, return, and or confirm the existence thereof any individual, wherever they might land and in whatever time they land. Getting to the point. Says he's aware that in our time, time travel is just a small dream that sounds amazing, but most believe it is not realistically possible. And then he flashes a grin to both Scarlett and I and says that we know better, don't we? I had to chuckle at that one. Even in the very short time we've spent with him so far, I am impressed, and I like the guy. He's quick, and to be sleeping on the ground in front of my space, this guy's determined, and he does appear knowledgeable. He goes on to tell us that he has come from the future, and that he has a target, a man who has planted himself here with us. Says he's 60 years ahead of us, and in his time, he's a Trace agent. He's tracked down lots of men and women who have escaped the system. Happens more than we would think. But he explains that with all the new technologies they now have, there are even more hacks and manipulations that junk up the system and skew the data and records. If someone gets away in his time, they have so much more at their fingertips. They're not just stuck running down the street in their orange jumpsuits looking for shoes. They have real possibilities. And so, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, he's tracked down others, a lot of others, apparently, in this way. So why did he come to me? Why does he need help this time? Well, we find out. That's because this time was different. Doesn't happen often, but on this trip, he missed his mark. Something got messed up, and he won't know what that is until he gets back, but he arrived in the right place, but at the wrong time. He is later than he should be. Says he's off by 3 days, which means his target has had time now to get to work. This man he's after, I'll refer to as Mr. Clovis, or just Clovis. That's how Thane referred to him. No need to get personal, he said. Emotional intelligence was a big part of their training, a good defense against manipulation. The man he's looking for had escaped 3 times before, and each time he was trying to do exactly what he's done. Because of the intense surveillance in his time, they knew this guy's intentions. Those flagged as a risk were watched closely. And we're talking way beyond the Big Brother of today. Law enforcement in his time was stronger, but those on the dark side were also getting stronger. They had better means of escape, and as technologies advanced, it helped those on both sides of the law. One of those advancements was in time travel, and as leaks go, this technology could not be kept secure, of course. Soon, it was not only being tested by scientists and in labs, it was being tested in the basements of the common man and the criminal. Like the meth labs of today, there were illegal travel labs, people risking their lives to participate in testing that could get them to their late mother or see the futures of their grandchildren. But these rogue labs weren't set up to benefit anyone walking into them. Even large companies were becoming corrupt, creating side labs and travel chambers where, if you paid enough, even you could get to your desired location on the timeline. This would lead to many problems, new problems not faced before, paired with all the existing issues already. Robberies still exist, murders for money still exist. Criminals want money, and it was no different with Thane's target. But law enforcement was on him. They knew what he was up to and that he wanted out. They also knew when and where he was going. And this really was no big deal. It was supposed to be easy. Follow, capture, and bring him home. But Thane was late. Thane explains that Clovis has made this trip back in time to take out the fraudulent trio that was what went wrong with his life. Tells us that Clovis was only 8 when it all started, when his father took the hit by the trio's scheme. Thane informs us that this trio consists of 2 men and a woman. Together as American financiers, through their success, earned the trust of thousands of investors. Over the years, they made millions, and their investors were also doing extremely well. I mean, everyone was happy. Their reputation was strong, and they were very well known by the time Clovis's father dove in. His father was in a good place. He was worthy and was ready to step things up. Starting to make a name for himself, he thought it was time to start playing with the big boys, and he decided to invest. In the end, however, the trio was a fraud, and they took all his father had, taking all he'd created in the decade before. And that was the beginning of the end. There were others that were hit much harder, but it was a hit big enough for them to change their lives. Their lives fell apart. Clovis's father was on his way up, and life was great. But after losing it all, Clovis's mother left, and young Clovis stayed with his dad, never to see his mother again. And after she left, things went even further downhill. Clovis and his father had nothing and ended up living in poverty in the streets of New York. His father didn't make it very long. He was always sick living in the streets. He drank too much. But young Clovis remained convinced that really, he died from the guilt of letting his family down and from a broken heart. His father started living more and more in the past. He would go over it again and again about how the trio did him in, how he trusted them, how he just couldn't understand. How could he make such a big mistake? And then he would call out for young Clovis's mother during the night, the cries of despair echoing through the alleys. It was heart-wrenching for young Clovis. 8 when his parents split, and 16 when his father passed, Clovis became a man right then and there on the streets. He was young, and he was committed to keep going and to redeem his father's legacy. He wanted to get out there and find the people that wronged him. And so he forged forward. But he did so with an angry heart and grew into a very bitter man. He did things his way, with no regard for anyone else. He would take from those that had what he wanted just because he could. He would get people out of his way that were in his way. Life on the street can harden anyone. But for Clovis, he had extra issues, what he saw as unfinished business. He kept the papers his father always carried with him. It was information on the trio, those 3 financiers. As long as Clovis had that, the possibility of revenge was out there, and he kept the dream in his mind. And although he talked about it often, his life of ongoing crime always kept him busy elsewhere. He became harsh and emotionless. But if you got him talking about his family and his past life, that was different. That was his one weak spot. Well, long story short, Clovis was finally able to get the cash together and stay focused long enough and find a travel lab that could get him back to where it all started, which is here in our time, to undo the damage done by those who ruined his situation and his life. He could have had it all, had his family. Instead, he's a grown man worn by life, and so he was on his mission. But with their heavy surveillance, the law was right behind him. He just didn't know it, that's all. So now I'm thinking, well, okay, so he's here, and Thane's here. So what is the current situation? Well, that question takes us back to what Thane mentioned earlier, that he was late. He had missed his mark. Since he did not get placed where and exactly when he was supposed to, Thane did not cross paths with Clovis like he should have when he got here. And so where he is exactly is not known, meaning where is Clovis hiding out, or if anyone else is with him. As far as the fraudulent trio goes, Thane knows exactly where they are and pretty much what they're doing, which is acting like a legitimate firm but stealing from pretty much anyone that comes to them willing to hand over a few bucks. All in New York, but he has yet to find Clovis. Which is why Thane came to the warehouse. He's looking for help and backup in finding Clovis because he needs to complete his mission as fast as possible. Because he missed his mark, he has no way of getting in touch with his people. and I'm his best chance at a resource for getting any of this done in an inconspicuous manner under the radar and in good time. Thane's goal was to get in and out without creating a ruckus or any unnecessary changes in the timeline. Again, Clovis was ahead of Thane by 3 days, and that might not seem like a lot, but when you're a man on a mission, a man who should have been nabbed minutes after landing, that's a lot. Thane's finishing up with his data dump on us when other members of my team start arriving. Frankie's the first one. He came in early to get a good workout in, but soon enough, they all trickle in, and we fill them in. Thane tells us more about Trace and about his work, and he can't go into too much detail because none of that has happened for us yet, but some is okay. After I get more information all around and with my team right there and in support, I agree to take this job and help Thane. And with that, it's time to dive more into Clovis. Thane breaks out even more information. He has another folder box in his bag, but when he opens up that one, we see it's not filled with documents like the other one. On one side of this box, there are rows of these metal sticks. They look like short chopsticks, and each one has a slot. On the other side, there's a pouch strapped in. Says he needs to plug in. So I get what he's saying. I get up and get my most powerful laptop and I bring it over. And out of the pouch, he pulls a small box. There are different cables. One of them's a USB. So I get the laptop all set up and he carefully picks out one of his metal sticks, inserts it into this little slot in the box, and then attaches his USB cord and attaches that to my laptop. I mean, it makes sense enough. But Thane tells us how no one uses traditional USBs anymore. He says most data is stored in the cloud, which is, yes, still called the cloud, which makes it even more confusing in the future. But there is still, in his time, and maybe always will be, a need for external secure storage. They've just come up with a new way of doing it. The data sticks hold huge amounts of data. They're much smaller, and in the future, they just need to be activated. The device finds it, and it reads from it. They don't even need to plug in. But since we're behind, he's brought his adapter. So he connects up, and this blue window pops up on my laptop. And then Thane brings up some videos of Clovis. We're able to see the man that we are now trying to help find and get. We also learn about this trio. The first thing we need to do is scope out their place of business, as well as what they are doing in their off time. So we get what we need together, and we're off to do just that. Because the trio is in a high-profile area, we too need to be there. So we're headed to Lower Manhattan, the home of more than just the New York Stock Exchange. We set ourselves up at Guildhall, a hotel near Wall Street, close enough to get around to where we need to, and it's nice, which is a bonus. At the hotel with me are Thane, Frankie, Jagger, and Harley. We don't need everyone on the job just yet. Scarlett and Ryder are back at the warehouse, and they're going to comb through those videos and the information that Thane brought us. Anything that stands out, they will share with us, in case it could help in some way. A lot of times, Harley's on that task, and she does it very well, I might add. But I wanted her there with us to keep an eye on Thane and Clovis, if we need her to, when we find Clovis. For now, the four of us hit the pavement, and we find the trio. We'll call Jack, Philip, and Gail. The three were independents, but after some time together, took a chance and started their own investment firm. And with their three financial minds all working together, they took off. And they look the part. These guys look like they are the heads of the world with an air of confidence that you don't see in too many people. They know they're doing great. What they don't know is that Clovis is here and that we're here. By the looks of it, it doesn't seem like any of the three have any idea that anything's out there. And just so you know, when all of this is going on, it's about 1 year in our time before Clovis's father would make the final choice to invest with them. When he started out in his research, this trio and their firm really stood out to him. And he did his due diligence, or so we thought. He took his time. He checked out many firms. But he just couldn't get these three out of his mind. They're firm. And in the end, after a year of looking and thinking about it, he decided he was all in. And he went to the trio and he never looked back. He felt good about himself. He had made the right choice. But he had no idea it would be the beginning of the end. Frankie and Jagger will keep an eye on those guys in case there's any news. And Harley, Thane, and I turn our attention to Clovis. But where to begin? He's not just going to be running the streets because now he's had 3 days. When the data was pulled on Clovis at the time of his escape, things were moving fast and everyone was in a hurry. The goal was to get Clovis as fast as they could and get him back before he did anything upon his arrival. Thane knew a lot about Clovis, but it wasn't, you know, as if he had the time to review and read all the information that was collected. The information was sent with him, but he'd had no time to review it all as of yet. When they learned of the escape, they just put Thane on the job and sent him on his way. So Scarlet and Ryder got on all of that right away. They went through the information that Clovis brought back with him and dug out some good information for us. They came up with 10 solid contacts that Clovis had traced back to this time, as well as a few others that he had discovered as people that he might seek out if he needed more help. And you have to know that when Clovis disappeared, it wasn't like he put up a big sign or sent out some kind of notice that he was leaving in this way. He actually thought that he did this all in secret. He left fake breadcrumbs to send people out in all different directions, including one that should make authorities believe that he had died. He did all that he could to cover his tracks with the hopes that they would give up on him and move on. And I'm telling you that because although we don't expect Clovis to just be running all over town announcing his presence, we don't expect him to be in deep hiding, all afraid to come out either. But with the authorities' new surveillance protocols, something that Clovis knew nothing about, they were well aware of Clovis's intended plans should he get out. He wanted to travel, time travel back to get his revenge and reset his life. He'd become obsessed with the idea. All right, well, we split up and we start hunting down this list of contacts to see if Clovis is with any of them. And I'm on my fourth contact when I get a notice on my wrist computer. It's from Frankie, and he's just sent a code. We use different codes for different things when we're separated like that so that we can still talk to each other without talking to anyone else that might find our information. Our wrist computers also track where we go, so I can connect to his and find out where he is. And that code, the code tells me that his undercover status could be in jeopardy. Because I got this code from Frankie, I call in the rest of the troops, and we take position on the edge of the area where Frankie's locator says he'll be, which is not really the cool part of Wall Street, but it's close enough. And it's an area that's undergoing some renovations. We don't see him at first, but then we spot him outside one of the older buildings. He's talking to three other guys. One we catch a glimpse of, but they're all in hoodies, you know, which is the thing now, right? And we couldn't see the other two. However, Thane was on the edge of his seat, certain that one of the guys was Clovis. Certain or not, we waited. The thing is that even if we would have seen his face and knew that Clovis was there at the time, it would have been a bad move to go run up to him and grab him. Now that he's been here for a few days, the right thing to do is first find out what he's been up to. What is in the works? What has he already set up with these thug buddies, apparently, that he has? If we just get Clovis, his plans could still be carried out, changing history. We would come to find out later that they had spotted Frankie hanging around. And having a guy like Frankie just hanging around, in their defense, you could see how they might be a little suspicious, especially since they had to be a little paranoid to begin with. If Frankie felt there was a threat at all, he was right to call us in to observe. Nothing did happen, however, and he was actually able to turn them around. At first, he was at risk of being discovered, but by the end of it all, he was someone they might even consider as an add to their team. It was perfect. Frankie was able to schmooze his way onto their good side, and by the time that meeting broke up, they were saying goodbye with fist bumps and smiles. We all left at that point and met back up at the hotel, and Frankie shares with us what he found out. One of the guys was Clovis. He's a tough guy for sure, he says, but he wasn't actually bad to talk to. The other two guys had cover names, you know, those amusing names that no one understands for those not-so-funny guys. We'll use Mad Dog and Mr. Mick. At first, they were all over his business, bugging Frankie about who he was and what he was doing there. They didn't pick a fight, though. They knew better on that one. But Frankie stayed cool, played it off like he was just like them, and that he was supposed to meet some guy there to get a hold of illegal steroids, among other things. Told him he was from Philly and new to the area, was looking to settle in and was looking for work. Once he had them calmed down, they actually all stepped inside, so they weren't as obvious out on the street. And on the inside, Frankie talked more about himself, playing right into the revenge game that Clovis was so into. Frankie knew who he was talking to. And while there, he scoped the place out and he took in every word they said. They were after a small group. Had to take them down, they said. They wouldn't say who they were, but we already knew it was the trio. Their plan was to get them, take their money, and take them out if they had to. shut down their operation, destroy their business, and get what is deserved. Well, what Clovis believed he deserved. Played it off as just a good money score. We knew better, of course. But then what? And this information we got from Thane, Clovis would be tracked by his time team while he was away. It's part of their service, but they would only do that for 10 days. Thane said that none of that was unusual. Within that 10 days, the people back in his time would be standing by to bring him back. There's plenty of time to get some things done. No problem for Clovis. Thane's situation was a little bit different, however. You know, because of that era in his travel, no one back home would have a lock on him, and his device was no good. And he showed us his device. It was just this little box, and as long as it was connected to his people and machines back home, it would have power, and you would just have to type in a code when you were ready to return, and it would send off a signal to the other side to suck you back, basically. Thane's had no power, though, because his connection broke the minute he took off. Anyway, while here and working still, Clovis and his guys were set up in one of those buildings being renovated. There were new owner issues and the construction was on hold. So that place was great for them for the short time that they needed it. So they had a home base and Clovis had a simple plan. Take down the trio, get what he came for, and go home to greatness. The other guys, they were just temporary. They could get money out of it and then Clovis, he'd just forget about them as soon as it all was done. And Clovis was close to carrying out his plan. I can't imagine how the built-up rage felt inside of him. I mean, he wanted these three since the whole thing started, since he was a boy. I kind of felt bad for the guy. He has no idea that he's Thane's target. He is the one that's about to be taken down, and none of his plans are going to happen. We were able to locate Clovis's father. And he didn't know it, but his father would end up being part of our plan should we need him. We found him and learned that he would walk by the area we were in every single day on his way to work. This was Clovis's old hood. Again, no wonder he was right here. And it wasn't a bad area. I mean, they were definitely on their way up and things were good. It would have been a major loss and change to be here and successful and then lose it all. We stay on these guys and their building 24/7. On a couple of Frankie visits, he provided enough of a distraction for us to be able to get Harley and Jagger on the inside. We had to confirm Clovis's timeline, and they could be in there a few days or a few hours, but we had to get them in there. And the building was fully functional, so they'd be okay. It was just getting updated. As long as they stayed out of Clovis's way, they could move about the place. We needed them to scope out the place, see what all he had going on in there. Frankie never made it all the way in. And while Harley and Jagger were there, everything went pretty smooth, although Harley did have one close call. One of the temp guys heard noises and kept moving in her direction, and she was able to sneak out back. And when she got back there, she actually lit up a smoke. And no, she doesn't smoke, but we have them on us sometimes to use as a quick cover. You know, you never know where you're going to find someone sneaking off for a few puffs. And really, who questions that? Anyway, Mr. Mick was the guy, and he finds her out back, and she just acts clueless. She played it off good and actually acted sort of mad, spouting off how no one can find any peace and quiet these days. Then she threw the smoke down and stomped off, only to be let back in by Jagger. But Mr. Mick didn't really think anything of it. He just went back inside. He was more annoyed than anything else. Harley and Jagger scoped out more of the place, and they planted listening devices. They found computers, torture equipment, and devices. Also, Clovis had all of the information from the real takedown laid out. He knew all about the trio's overseas bank accounts, the ones filled with all the money they had taken for people through fraudulent investments, accounts he planned on draining as soon as he had the trio in his custody. He could have very well just taken the money and ran, but he wanted them to suffer. He didn't want his dad to go to them. He was on a mission, and in his mind, he was going to see it through. It was more than just money to him. He wanted his life. Back at our own home base, Thane and I are discussing options, and Thane has an idea that at first I was against, but Thane had answers to my resistance. Like I mentioned earlier, we had access to Clovis's father, and Thane wanted to use him, and at first I was worried that this would be too invasive and change the path of too many things. Clovis's father's investment dealings were all a part of how these guys eventually got caught. But Thane assures me that it will be okay, and he breaks out yet another little gadget, says he has it all covered. He's holding this little black device, and the closest thing I can think of to compare it to give you guys an idea of what it looked like is a stun gun, only smaller than the ones I've seen. Thane says it's a glitch ticker. Now, I don't know what that is, but he hands it to me, and he tells me that that one is now mine. With him focusing on Clovis, I will need it, he says, for his plan to work, and that no, it would not leave a mark on the future. And he explains, this device can be set for up to 60 clicks, a click being 30 seconds, which gives us 30 minutes, he says, 30 minutes of rewind. This is not something that someone could use in real time, you know, like maybe you would wish you didn't say what you did and you want to go back just a few seconds, but you can use it while traveling. It will cause a glitch in time for up to that 30 minutes. The plan would be to work Clovis's weakness. And of course, thoughts of why and how this all got started could stop Clovis in his tracks. He was tormented by it. Harley's evaluation was almost that of PTSD, but it was also that of torment and pain independent of that. He watched his father fall and die over this, yet he still had not made good on his word. He was a man now, a man who took paths in life his father never would have approved of. Still affected by his father's words of wisdom, he feels like a failure, and he was overridden by guilt, on top of all of his rage and anger and horrible memories. Again, you could feel for the guy, almost. He's just chasing happiness and family and all those things that most people seek out and feel good with. But it can't end the way he wants, unfortunately. And we set it up. According to what we'd learned so far, Clovis's plan was to collect his victims the next day. However, Jagger and Harley tell us that the three men have left, and they haven't returned. It's been a few hours. It's time to put our plans into action and get control of this situation. There hasn't been any damage so far, and we'd like to keep it that way. It's time to capture Clovis and put an end to what he has going on. I go find Clovis's father. By now we know his routine, and I catch him on his way home from where he's working, which is across the street and down just a ways from where Clovis is set up. It takes a little bit of talking, but I work fast, since I only have my 30 minutes, to get him over to the building where Clovis is and to get this thing done. I tell him a story that I know is out of this world for him, but I'm successful in getting him to come with me. I tell him I'm aware of his investment considerations, that I'm aware of Jack, Philip, and Gail. I know all about his wife, and I know about his son, Clovis. Pulling on his parental heartstrings, I tell him about what Clovis becomes, and that he's here as his future self. I tell him that if he has any hope of saving his son, that he needs to do something now, that he needs to come with me. And I say a lot more than that, but if you're a parent, you know that if you have any inkling or thought that your child might be in danger, you'd do anything to save them from that. On my way over to Clovis's building, I get a message. In the time that I was talking to Clovis's father, Clovis pulled up out back and unloaded his three victims with the help of his two men. Apparently, they decided to move things up a bit. When Frankie went knocking, which was the plan, and Mad Dog opened the door, he and Thane barged in, just like they were going to. But when they got downstairs to meet Clovis and Mr. Mick, they found them there with their guns drawn. Well, I continue on in, Clovis's father in tow. And everyone's downstairs, and we just walk right in. Harley and Jagger have weapons pulled out and pointed at the three men, while the three men have their weapons drawn and they're pointed at our guys. It's not an ideal situation. But we walk in and surprise everybody. Frankie still has a hold of Mad Dog. Mr. Mick just looks very confused now that we're there. He doesn't appear to be very experienced. He's kind of pointing his gun all over the place. But when Clovis sees us and sees his father, his hand just falls to his side. His jaw drops. And he's just staring ahead in disbelief. He tells his men to stand down. Clovis's father calls out to him and asks him, what is he doing? Asks if it's really him. I mean, did he really come to the future to save him? Clovis's eyes well up with tears, and the only thing he can get out is, Dad? It's a father-son moment like no one would ever have the chance to witness. A father seeing his son as a grown man while he himself is still young and filled with dreams of his young boy's future. They're both in a little bit of shock and they're overwhelmed, but they're also filled with joy. It was one of those moments where we were doing the right thing and we were helping catch a violent criminal. But at the same time, we were witnessing something extremely emotional, a moment that many people miss even when they see each other every single day. Clovis was waiting to see his father again, but he didn't expect this, not like this. The two end up in an embrace. I start looking around and I see that they already have tied up the trio. Each are in a chair and were very quickly bound and with duct tape around the ankles and wrists and mouths. They had their guys. They had all their supplies with which to torture them with. And they had their computers all set up to get all of that money. I also look at the time, and we've already burned up about 15 minutes with Clovis's father. The trio have been all knocked out, so their time hasn't technically started yet, but we need to get Clovis's father finished up and back out onto the street. And he knows that his time is running out. I've already explained all this to him, but he's in a very sad moment talking to his son. And these are new words that Clovis has never heard before from his father, but they're the final words he will ever hear from him. His father tells him that this is not the way, and that he will do everything he can to keep their lives on track. He doesn't know anything about this failure that Clovis is supposedly back to fix. He has only good intentions, as all parents do, and would never let that happen. This brings Clovis to tears because, of course, he already knows the truth. He knows the outcome. His father tells him that this is not how he is being raised and to stop what he is doing right then and there. And I did give Clovis's father some information, all that I could fit in a short amount of time, but he is pretty confused looking around at all the hostages and just with everything going on. I walk up to Clovis's father and I tell him that we do need to get going. He knew the deal. And he gives his son one more very big and strong hug and just tells him to go back. Go back and do what he's supposed to do and stop the madness. That life will be what it's supposed to be. And to interfere like he's trying to do is wrong. No matter what he thinks is going to happen, he tells him that it's not our job to change what has been done over time. It's only our job to change ourselves over time, if need be. Tells him what will be, but to never forget his love for him. And that if he could take anything with him in his life from him, he would like it to be his love through all the good and bad. Then he steps back. Tells him he loves him one more time and says his goodbyes, and then gives me the nod. I escort him back outside, and with the glitch ticker pressed to his chest, I set it off. And when I do, it's like the air just bubbles up all around us. I turn him around, and when he comes to, I step back as if I'm walking the other direction, and I see him look around a little bit. He's a little bit confused, but then he just shakes it off and continues on his way. He will go on with his day and his life. And what is left of it, not knowing the difference. To him, he just had a deja vu, nothing more. Back inside, I find Clovis on his knees. Thane has already kicked the other two thugs out and sent them on their way. They're not too bright, not bright enough to do anything about what they've seen. They're confused, and they're just going to go on to find some other crime to be a part of. So it is just us and Clovis. Thane turns to Clovis and asks him to break out his device. It's time to enter the code, he says. And Thane is about to hitch a ride. It's the only way for him to get back to the exact place that he needs to be. Although dangerous, because he doesn't know with whom he'll end up with. And his team doesn't even know where he is or that he will be returning at that time. It's his only choice. He doesn't have another choice. And we were kind of getting a little attached to Thane, you know, all of his gadgets and information, but it was time for him to go. He wasn't meant to be here with us, and he's ready to go back. Clovis is at a loss for words. There are a few tears running down his cheeks, but he doesn't say a thing. Shane gets him to his feet, and he ends up digging out the device from his jacket and asks Clovis for his code. And at first, Clovis doesn't respond. He's just in shock. And he looks up, he looks around the room, he looks down at the device, and then up to Thane, and he eventually spits out the number. Thane tells us his goodbyes and thanks us for our service. Looks over to our three hostages and reminds me that I know what to do, and he's leaving me with them and the glitch ticker. And it only took about 5 to 10 more seconds, and they were gone. A huge air bubble formed all around us and in that room, and as it rose to the surface, they disappeared. As for us, one by one, we carried the trio outside. Frankie and Jagger had to hold them up until the ticker did its thing. They would come to, They would wake up, and like Clovis's father, would be confused for a moment, wondering why they were there, but not having an explanation, they would just move on from it. It's interesting how often people don't question what they don't understand. They literally just shook it off. They looked a little confused, but rather than stand there and feel embarrassed, each one of them just scrambled their way on to find normal. We cleared the building out of any evidence that anything had even happened, and it was kind of strange because we had no client to close out with. There was nothing to do. This case literally just puffed up into the wind all around us. And then there we were, cleaning up evidence of something that no longer even existed. Clovis would not go back to any new life. And even though Clovis's father would do anything he could to be true to himself and trying to take his family in the right directions, we know that that wouldn't work out either. Having the ability to go back in time does not mean that you go back to fix everything that's gone wrong. All that really does is lead to other negatives that can happen throughout other branches of the timeline. It's never really fixed. And I've referred to that movie, The Butterfly Effect, before because it's pretty perfect. And I think of it again because with one fix comes a whole bunch of other problems. It's really best just left alone, no matter how horrible you think things are. And I really liked what Clovis's father said. It's not our job to go back and fix what's happened. It's our job to fix ourselves. Although time passes and is against us, if we are fortunate to have more time in front of us, it's a gift that we can use to change whatever we want about ourselves or our lives. That is up to us. That is in our control. And that is okay. We think about Thane every now and again, and we talk about him sometimes, wondering what he would do or what would happen in his time with different situations that we deal with. You know, after you've met people who have traveled through time, or you've seen things because you yourself have traveled through time, it changes your perspective on everything. Time seems slow, but it moves so quickly. And for each one of us, it's finite, and all we can do is make the best of what we've got. And that was the job with the time traveler that dropped in our lap, a member of law enforcement, a force that could travel to any place, anywhere, anytime to capture those trying to flee from the consequences they face. Just when I think that me and my team have seen and have had access to the coolest stuff out there, we're always reminded, one way or the other, that there's so much more out there that we don't know. All we had to show from that job was our one souvenir, and we still have that glitch ticker safely tucked away. Not exactly sure when those were invented. I mean, who knows? Maybe I will still see them invented and used yet in my own lifetime. You never know. Thank you for listening to this story and taking the time to be with me this Friday and this weekend. Like, subscribe, turn on your notifications. Hopefully you'll get some. And until next time. I always have more stories to share, and I will talk to you all soon.